I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You don't think that it's time that somebody cared enough to have a dream?
Why are you getting so upset? This is not about you.
Yes, it is. You are a human affront to all women, and I am a woman.
At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you are. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
How do you go about getting an exorcism?
I beg your pardon?
Hi, this is Mark Kermode. Thanks for downloading this Kermode on Film podcast. Happy New Year to all our listeners. To celebrate the new year, I'm joined by Jack Howard.
Hello.
Looking forward to what we're looking forward to in 2020, other than Trump losing the presidency or being impeached, sure, which I think would be the blockbuster hit of the year. So I looked through the list of films that are coming up, and I've got some movies down in the month that they're coming out, mm-hmm, in the UK. But we don't need to stick rigidly to that. I also want to begin by saying that the thing I'm most looking forward to in 2020 is the thing I don't know anything about.
Go on.
Because, well, no, at the end of every year, I mean, genuinely. I know I say this and people think, oh, he's just saying it. I am, the thing that I'm always looking forward to is the thing that I'm not expecting.
Yeah.
You know, that the fourth screening on a Tuesday afternoon that turns out to be some masterpiece that you knew nothing about, the film that I only knew the title of. So
what was that in 2019 for you?
Well, weirdly enough, it's something that's actually coming out in 2020, which we'll talk about in just a second, which is opening here, I think, in January or February. February, I think it is. But it's always the unexpected stuff. I mean, I remember seeing, you know, a couple of years ago, seeing the Celine Siamar Girlhood, you know, Bond, and just being completely knocked out by it and not knowing anything about it in advance. So, if we look just at the immediate months, because we're now into sort of awards season, so there is stuff coming out in January and February.
And I suppose we're building towards the BAFTAs and the Oscars
yeah,
as well.
So stuff that's in contention, but some of which I've seen, some of which I haven't. So 1917, I really enjoyed.
So in the future, when you are listening to this, I have seen it.
Yeah.
I'm seeing it at the weekend. But at the moment, it still is on. It's like maybe out of all the ones that are in contention for the awards, it's the one that I haven't seen yet.
Okay. I mean, I really liked it.
I'm very excited about it.
It's very experiential.
Yeah.
You know, it's very much that whole, the kind of the illusion of the one-shot thing. Mm-hmm. And of course, gorgeous George MacKay, who is just great in everything.
Yeah.
And I think the score's terrific.
Roger Deakins.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't go wrong.
Right? I know.
And I think Sam Mendes is doing this thing where he's sort of following behind Christopher Nolan in a very strategic way. Like, I think that whether it's intentional or not, but Nolan seems to be carving out a path, and then Sam Mendes is taking advantage of that.
I think with
Skyfall, which was basically the Bond's version of Dark Knight, and then Dunkirk, and now this, it feels a little bit like he's got that same sensibility. And when I interviewed him for Spectre, I talked to him about the fact that on Spectre was a lot of Christopher Nolan's crew.
Yeah.
It was a lot of, like, it was his editor Lee Smith, it was Hoyte van Hoyte who shot it. And I was like, is that a coincidence? And he was like, well, there's only a certain amount of people who can make films like this. And he was like, I think Skyfall's closer to a Nolan film than this is. But I was like, I just get the impression that he's very much taking advantage of the footprints that Nolan is leaving.
Yeah.
And I think he's a wonderful filmmaker. I think American Beauty is one of my favourite films of all time. And he clearly knows what he's doing, but I think that he is looking at original filmmaking like Nolan and going, I'm just going to piggyback on that a little bit. But maybe 1917 is nothing like Dunkirk.
I don't think it is at all. You know, Chris Pine was offered a role in the Nolan film. He said, no, Dunkirk. It's nothing like Dunkirk.
I didn't even know that was a joke. I was like, what? Cap just...
That joke's been making me laugh.
People be like, people are always asking, like, I can't believe you get to make things with Mark Kermode. What's it like? That.
That's what it's like. Yeah. Okay, so also out in January, so tell me if you've seen any of these, The Personal History of David Copperfield, Dark Waters, and The Lighthouse. Now, of all of them, The Lighthouse is the one I'm looking forward to the most.
I'm really looking forward to The Lighthouse. When I was in Los Angeles recently, I went to go see a lot of
films. People ask me what it's like working with Jack Hill. That's what it's like. I was having dinner with Ron Howard. Anyway, I told you I do a thing.
I was with
Dean.
Joss Whedon last night.
Yeah, Joss, shut up.
I really was though.
Yeah, I'm sure you were. Did he mention me?
No, I didn't. But maybe I should have mentioned you, and that might have.
Why would he know who I am? He's got no way.
He would know who you are.
I think it's very unlikely.
I think.
Anyway,
he would.
Moving on.
Anyway, but like when I was in Los Angeles, I saw a lot of films that aren't out here for a while, because I was just taking advantage of that and seeing them in their wonderful theatres, which a lot of them still play in film because that's their culture over there. And The Lighthouse is one of the ones that I just didn't get around to seeing. It's one of those ones that I think I'm going to need to see in a cinema, but it also feels like I don't know what mood I'm going to need to be in to see it. It looks very, very unique.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Because you love The Witch, right?
I love The Vavitch. Yeah, I thought it was absolutely great. I never figured out why they wrote it there, but I think that everything about the look of that film is great. Plus, having just seen a few images from Lighthouse, it kind of looks to me like a companion piece to Bait, which is, you know, I think the real sort of discovery of 2019. No, I mean, I just think he's a brilliant director, and I'm a big fan of Robert Pattinson anyway.
Yeah,
so anyway,
too.
I'm really looking forward
to it. I hear
Willem
Dafoe's incredible in it as well.
Yeah.
I saw a thing recently about them being scripted farts, and I was like, right.
Okay, that's it.
I'm interested.
Sign me up.
Why just spill your beans? Rock. 5 weeks? 2 days? Help me to recollect.
Moving on to February, and this is February is a great month. The three things that I'm interested in February: Parasite, Little Joe, and Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Portrait of a Lady on Fire is the Celine Siamar who I was mentioning about seeing Girlhood and thinking, wow, I just absolutely knocked me out. Parasite.
I've seen it.
Oh my.
Have you seen it?
Yes.
It's so good.
It's so, and here's the worst thing about it. What I want to say to everybody is stop listening now.
Yeah, totally.
Just see Parasite.
Just know that it's good.
Just know that it's good. I mean, you know, I think Bong Joon-ho is a brilliant director anyway.
Me too.
But
I love Snowpiercer. I was so surprised by Snowpiercer.
I had the great privilege recently of opening up the John Hurt Centre up in Norwich, and they did a proper screening of Snowpiercer, which, of course, most people here have only seen on a small screen.
Yeah, me too.
Because it wasn't theatrically released. Wow, does that film look great on a big screen? Because it looks absolutely brilliant. Parasite is just, I mean, it is brilliant, isn't it?
Do you know what?
Absolutely brilliant.
What added to it as well, because I saw it in LA, and it was in a darker theatre. You know how they leave certain lights on in theatres?
Yeah.
This was like pitch black in here. It was just the screen, and you couldn't see anything else. And that really added to it, just like being completely sucked in by it. I just had no idea. I avoided all trailers.
No, exactly.
I'd avoided everything. I had no idea what it was going to be. It is so many things. It is so difficult to summarise, but it is exceptional.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think the only thing you can say about it is that it's a social satire in which the class warfare element is very, very strongly done. But it's also a movie about which, without being a spoiler, there's a moment in it that I gasped out loud. Mm-hmm. Firstly, because I didn't see it coming, but then, of course, I realised that, of course, I should, because the whole film is moving in that direction anyway. I just thought it was genuinely astonishing. I mean, genuinely astonishing. And at the end of it, I watched it with my son, who was just afterwards went, well, that's just perfect.
Yeah.
He said, there's nothing wrong with that film. It's absolutely perfect. And then
it's
weirdly
Shakespearean. It's weirdly Hitchcockian.
Wonderful.
It's funny. It is everything that you would want to see in a film. In one film.
Right. And the other film that's out in February, have you seen Little Joe?
I haven't.
So Little Joe is what Day of the Triffids would be like if it was directed by Joanna Hogg. It's like this really kind of low-key, intense drama about the creation of a plant which has calming capabilities and yet cannot reproduce. And you start to wonder whether the plant is actually starting to exert an influence on the people around it or whether they're just quietly going mad. And I thought it was absolutely brilliant. Okay. I really, really loved it.
Intrigued.
I thought it was, I think it was great. I think you'll really like it as well. I don't think it's going to have a huge audience. It was a prize winner in Cannes, but I thought it was really fascinating. And every now and then you see a film and it just hits the sweet spot between genres. Yes. Like, so it's not a science fiction film, but it's got elements that which I really love.
Haven't you noticed how Chris has changed? I think little Joe's pollen has triggered something. Little Joe changes the people he infects. You're starting to notice too, aren't you? Fear can distort our perception of reality.
If I made a mistake, then it's my fault.
It seems that this has all been a bit much for you.
He frightens me.
You're a good mother. But which of your children will you choose?
Good night, little Joe.
On into March, Quiet Place 2.
Oh yeah, I'm into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited. Yeah,
so are we excited or are we worried? Because the first one was so great.
It was so great. No, I'm excited.
Do you know anything about
it? Not a clue.
No, okay, me neither.
And I don't want to, actually. I'm obviously they've made it because it was a huge moneymaker. They've made a second part because of that. But
was it a huge hit?
I think it was.
Right, because it kind of cost very much money.
No. But like it was produced like Michael Bay's, like all the all the visual effects were done by the people who do a lot of Michael Bay stuff, which is why I was so shocked by how good the visual effects were in Quiet Place. I was expecting them to hide more than they were.
I thought it wiped the slate clean as far as Michael Bay's concerned. I thought, okay, fine, I will forgive you everything because of Quiet Place.
And
not everything. Yeah. I want Quiet Place 2 to be great. Incidentally, that same month, Peter Rabbit 2.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot to look forward to.
I know. I was wondering what happened to those characters.
Yeah.
Definitely, at the end of the film, I was wondering, what?
Is Donald Gleeson back?
I don't know. All I know is that it's
coming.
That's
as far as this bit
it's
goes.
Coming, I just don't
care. Yeah. But also in March, Bond?
Yeah, no, March. That's April Bond.
Is that
I think.
April?
Yeah, so April, I think it's the very beginning of April.
Yeah.
No Time to Die. Now, so let's do No Time to Die.
Okay.
Firstly, what a terrible title.
There's still time to change the title, everybody.
Okay.
Like we'll all be like, fine, if you choose to do a different one.
If you call it anything other than No Time to Die,
when
which
I
is
heard
a
that,
terrible title.
I was like, this sounds like a cheap knockoff video game version of a Bond film.
Yeah.
No Time to Die is going to be the last Bond film that Daniel Craig does. I saw the trailer. I haven't seen it. Just released. And in the trailer,
just released a month ago from when this goes out,
because
we're in a sort of timey-wimey
thing
now.
We're back in time. Yeah. Right, in the trailer, there is a disfigured villain who has an affinity with Bond. His girlfriend has a dark secret. Bond is assumed dead. And I'm like, we can do better than this. And people are obviously saying...
Bear in mind, we haven't seen the film.
We haven't seen the film. So this is only just in the trailer, obviously, but I'm getting an impression. And people are saying to me, it's James Bond, what do you expect? And I'm like,
more.
Better. More than this. Because we've seen two times with Daniel Craig that Casino Royale and Skyfall are brilliant films in their own right. And it's because they're trying to treat it like one thing. Like, we're meeting James Bond and this is what he's doing this time. But the ones in between, Quantum of Solace, Spectre, and now No Time to Die, look like they are referencing other things that we need to bring something to this film that we shouldn't have to bring, that we should be able to come into this cold.
But still, we're basing all of this on the trailer. And as we know, you can't review a film on the basis of the trailer.
You can't.
My problem is...
But I'm not excited for
I'm worried. I want it to be good. I really want it to be good. I really, really want it to be good. I'm really worried that there is going to be a moment in it when somebody says, this is no time to die, at which point everyone can applaud and leave. And also...
It reminds me of Pierce Brosnan saying the world is not enough.
Does he? Does he actually say that?
Yeah, Elektra says, I could have given you the world. And he goes, the world is not enough.
Do you know the thing about the society of people that sit in cinemas until somebody says the title, at which point they applaud and then leave? I actually can't ever hear the title of a film there without wanting to applaud and leave.
Yes, and okay. Then up and out.
All right, but hey, it might be great.
It might be great, or it might be fine, or it might be bad.
I really wanted it to be Danny Boyle or Danny Boyle. And I am disappointed that it's not. But then, you know,
Cary Fukunaga is a great director. Like, you haven't seen True Detective, I imagine.
No.
Yeah, True Detective was really, really good.
Okay.
He also made a series on Netflix called Maniac, which I've seen some of, but not all of, and is wonderfully directed. It has a very specific, dark, cold tone. So if he brings that type of sensibility to a Bond film, I'll be very interested in just how different that feels.
Do you want to know the last two television series that I've seen in their entirety?
Go on.
Just last week, last month from this, I finished Breaking Bad.
Finally, wow.
Oh my God!
It's just so strange to be having this conversation now.
I know, it's so weird.
But great, isn't it?
I've still got to see El Camino. So
I haven't seen El Camino yet either.
Fine. Breaking Bad. But the TV series that I saw in total before that was Life on Mars.
Okay.
Right. That's how long ago I watched
Mark,
the television
this year
series.
In television, maybe one of the best years in television I've ever seen.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, like...
When you say this year, you mean 2019?
2019, yeah.
Last year.
Yeah, like the shows like on Netflix, like Unbelievable. There was a show on HBO called Watchmen, which is incredible, which is based on the comic book.
Yeah.
Like, nothing to do with the
film. I know what Watchmen is.
Yes.
I know I'm out of touch, but I'm not that out of touch.
All right, yeah. But, like, it's a sequel to that graphic novel.
Yeah, okay.
And it's incredible. There was a show as well called Euphoria, which was brilliant. Fleabag, you've heard of and is brilliant.
Yeah.
It is... And the filmmaking
in
television.
Friend of mine produced Fleabag. I mentioned only in passing.
Really? Yeah. All right.
She won an Emmy recently.
That's so cool. That show is so special. Yeah. And I think that what I'm loving so much about television at the moment is it feels like everything that people are complaining about on a large scale about cinema, I think all the interesting and more experimental filmmaking is actually happening in television at the moment.
Okay.
On a larger scale.
But Breaking Bad.
But Breaking Bad is so good.
Oh, and I was the last.
I hope this opens doors for you to be able to go and watch.
Well,
more
I interviewed Ryan Johnson about Knives Out, and at that point, I hadn't seen Ozymandias, and I said, "You cannot say anything about Ozymandias
because he also directed The Fly."
He did, which we did talk about, but Ozymandias.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Anyway, fine. So moving on. Okay. So
we just talked about Breaking Bad.
Also in April, Rocks, the Sarah Gavron film, which has been a huge festival favourite.
Oh, I've not heard of this
one. That's the film which, wherever it's played, has absolutely taken the roof off. Sarah Gavron's a really interesting director. People have compared it to like The Breakfast Club and said it's really, really, really.
I'm so interested.
Yeah. So, and I think she's a really interesting filmmaker, and I'm really looking forward to that.
Can I just ask, because we've gone quite far on now, and I wonder whether or not this would have made it on the list. But is Honey Boy coming out next year?
Honey Boy is this week.
It's already out.
What did you think?
I loved it.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't
it? Yeah, it's my second favourite film of the year.
Okay.
So of 2019, my films go Marriage Story, number one, then Honey Boy, then Parasite.
Yeah. I'm going from here to interview Noel Baumbach. We're good friends. We're very close.
Oh, mate. Can you just tell him how special that film is, please? From me. Honey Boy.
No, because you didn't mention me to Joss Whedon. Why should I mention you to Noah Baumbach?
Because I'm asked.
Oh, okay, fine. Okay, Honey Boy has happened.
Okay,
already,
Honey Boy's so already fun. Happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So moving on now to May, the two things that jumped out for me are Artemis Fowl, Legally Blonde 3.
Oh, wow. I forgot.
I know. Now, I have no idea whether it's going to be any good. I mean, I love
Probably
Legally
not.
Blonde.
Hang on. Have we missed Mulan?
That's around about the same time.
I think
time.
That's around March.
Correct me on this. Hasn't Mulan basically been finished forever?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Are you thinking that it's been in like development or something like that?
Well, I know they've been fiddling around with it for a long time. Tell me about this. Is the live action Mulan?
The live action Mulan.
So tell me what you're right.
In my time, the trailer came out yesterday.
Okay.
And I have not cared about any of the live action remakes that Disney's
done. And you care about
this? And I care about this.
Okay.
Because it looks like it's been made by filmmakers.
Okay.
It doesn't look like a Disney film,
weirdly.
It looks like a proper film. It looks like it's about what it's about rather than being like, we're going to take this and do like a light kids thing.
Okay.
It looks like an intense version. It looks like a proper remake. It looks like they're taking the source material and going, but now we're going to do this in it. And so it's got like a grandiose version of the Mulan song in the trailer, which obviously creates a lot of nostalgia anyway.
Okay.
But just the images, I was like, this, because when I saw, I didn't see Aladdin, but I saw the trailer for Aladdin. Mm. And when I watched it, I was like, this just looks plastic. Everything about this looks like there's no personality behind it. And Mulan looks like it's been made by somebody who really cares and knows how to, you know, just simple stuff, move the camera, block the actors, like create a world. It looks like it's been filmed on location. It looks very interesting. And I'm interested to see how that plays out in a serious tone.
Loyal, brave, and true. It is my duty to protect my family.
Ancestors, please protect her.
What is your name, soldier?
Hua Jun, Commander, son of Hua Zhou.
We're going to make men out of every single one of you.
Close the gate!
The spirit is evident, but something holds you back.
When they find out who you are, they will show you no mercy. I'm Hua Mulan. I will bring honor to us all.
Okay, well, that's now a reason for me to be excited, because I literally just looked at it and thought, oh, it's another live action.
Exactly,
Disney
movie. Yeah. That's how I was feeling until I saw the trailer yesterday.
Oh, okay, fine. All right. So in that case, I'll have that. But then get to June, Wonder Woman 1984.
Yeah.
That I am excited about.
I'm very excited about that.
Now, you're more in the kind of the comic strip movies world than I am. What do we know so far?
We know that Chris Pine is back somehow.
Dunkirk,
yeah. God,
because he's Dunkirk, and the film's called Dunkirk, so he said
it's a Star Trek
Dunkirk
thing.
You see, it's like a
so we know that he's back in it somehow. I don't know how that's going to work, but we know very little. We know the cast. We know Kristen Wiig is playing a villain in it, which is an interesting casting choice.
Yeah. Why is it called Wonder Woman 1984?
I imagine it's taking place in 1984.
Okay, there we go. That's another mystery solved.
I imagine that's my only guess.
But I'm looking to you on this. This is the world that you know. Mm-hmm. You know more about this world than I do. So,
well, I'm feeling that this one, Patty Jenkins will be given stronger, like a more free rein on this one, and allowed to do her own thing. Because I think that
she made such a massive hit of Wonder Woman.
Yeah, and I think the last time it was forced to sit within this DCEU thing that they were doing, and now it feels like they're letting that be a bit more loose, especially now that we've got Joker and this new The Batman that Matt Reeves is doing that feels like it's this one-off thing as well. And Wonder Woman 1984... I'm expecting to be better than Wonder Woman. Because I actually think that the first... I don't know what your thoughts were.
I liked it.
Yeah, I liked it too.
I really enjoyed it.
I thought it started off pretty good. I thought the second act was fantastic, and I thought the third act was bad.
But the third act... It was like every other... Yeah. But
I just don't want them to do that with
But that feels like a kind of generic issue, doesn't it? It's like you've got all the stuff. Oh, yeah, now there's just a...
And what we're talking about now is going to be out of date by the time this comes out, because there will be a trailer out,
yeah,
so
sure.
We will know more.
Okay.
But... we're excited.
Yeah, we're at the beginning of December and we're excited, and Jack's seen the trailer and I haven't, but I'm looking forward to it. Okay, so that's in June. Here are the three things that I picked for July. Minions: The Rise of Gru, just because, I'm sorry, I find Minions funny.
I genuinely thought you would be like Tenet straight away.
Yeah, and then Tenet and Top Gun Maverick.
Right.
Okay,
so excited.
But I wanted to say...
I don't want to talk about it.
No, because you don't think Minions are funny.
No, because you're the only person who does.
That's
fine. Look, I'm not going to judge you for it. I just don't want to talk about it.
Okay, I know it's become this thing, right, that apparently it is really embarrassing how funny I find Minions.
It is a little bit.
Okay.
It's like, apparently, it's like apparently I have to go, he likes Twilight.
Yeah.
And he likes Minions.
Okay, but apparently it's like being the worst dad in the world liking Minions. It's like, you know, I've got Minion socks, and apparently that is...
You're not
like,
wearing them, are you?
I'm not, but I just because it was dark when I got up, I would have done it just to annoy. So do you not find the Minions funny?
No, I don't. Okay. No, not at all.
They just make me laugh.
Oh, well, good. Well, I'm glad you get something out of it.
I get a huge amount out of it. I mean, I could watch the bottom thing like over and over and over again. Okay. All right, so, Tenet.
Have you seen the teaser trailer for Tenet?
No.
Because nobody really has, because it was only playing in cinemas ahead of certain films. So I saw it in Canada before Joker, and I forgot that they were doing it.
Right.
So I just like tensed up and fully freaked out that I was seeing footage from Nolan's new film.
So what do we know?
We know that John David Washington's in it, that Robert Pattinson's in it. We know that Tenet is a palindrome.
Right.
So that I think that he's going to be doing another thing again where he's playing with time.
Okay.
My thing that I'm thinking about is that I'm pretty sure the whole film is probably going to be a palindrome of some sort.
Okay.
And I've heard that he's been filming action scenes in reverse. And I'm like, sure. Okay, Nolan, do your thing. Because this feels like it could be his... People have speculated that it's a sequel to Inception, and I don't think that's true.
Okay.
Unless he... Because in the trailer it said, it's time for a new hero. And I was like, okay, I don't think it will be...
Howard the Duck.
Sure. I think we're all ready for that.
I'd love it if Chris Nolan made a Howard the Duck movie.
I think he'd do it. I think he'd do...
With a timey-wimey thing going on. That would be great. Okay, so I haven't seen... Because I generally try to avoid trailers as much as is possible.
Mm.
I just know, you know, I looked at the title and thought, But okay, it being a palindrome now kind of makes sense.
Yeah, it's like Nolan just seems to be able to find new ways of playing with time every single time that he does something. And... I'm just so excited every single time he does anything, and the fact that this might be another in the same vein as Inception in terms of like an action movie on a big sort of sci-fi scale.
We don't know,
and it'll be 10 years after Inception as well. So it's been it'll have been 10 years.
Wow.
Isn't that insane?
Yeah, I still think of Inception as fairly recent. But
then
I think it feels like
one of the most modern blockbusters of all time.
I think of anything
still.
This side of the 21st century as having happened fairly recently. And in that same month, Top Gun Maverick. So this is more your... Because when Top Gun came out, I was in my absolutely, you know, militant, this is all fascist nonsense period. And it was only years later that I went to there was an academic conference on musicals, and somebody did a brilliant paper on how the jet fighters are used as musical dance numbers, and they were talking about the cutting of the Danger Zone sequence.
And it just helps you watch it differently.
Yeah, it just helped me get beyond the it's all fascist propaganda thing, you know. Because so where are you with Top Gun?
So I enjoy the first Top Gun kind of like it's dated in my head because I watch those sequences and all I see is like, oh, you filmed this, but like it's nonsense. Like I can't tell where anyone is or what's going on, and it's very, very 80s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In a way that I sometimes just find funny because it's so in that time period. But this new one, because Tom Cruise, he's really flying planes. That you know, in the trailer there is a shot of him like taking off, like with the camera strapped to the front, and it's clearly him, clearly really flying a plane. And so I'm in it for the same reason I'm into Mission Impossible, which is like, I'm going to just go and see what he does.
You actually want to see Tom break his ankle in real life.
Yeah, yeah, and they keep it in.
That's right, yeah. It's a good shot.
It's a great shot. So I'm just excited to see how the spectacle of it in IMAX and just the thrill of that. I'm excited.
Okay, all right. Well, again, I mean, I'll have to go back and revisit because I haven't seen it since it came out.
Mm.
And I just sat through the whole screening going, harumph.
Yeah, sure.
You know, because I had all this baggage about it. And then later on, I interviewed Tim Robbins and he said, yeah, you want to look into how that film got financed. He said, you know, that film could not have got made without the cooperation of the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, so basically it is paid for propaganda.
Sure, you know? Yeah. So. I don't doubt it. Yeah.
The end is inevitable, Maverick. Your kind is headed for extinction.
Maybe so, sir. But not today.
Thank you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
August, Bill and Ted.
I'm excited about that.
Now that is, no, but is Bill and Ted pre your?
It's pre my pre-you, era, right, okay. I discovered it. Okay. You know, the way that people do.
So for me, Bill and Ted was always Wayne's World before. Well, I know that Wayne's World was on television beforehand, but I saw Bill and Ted before I saw Wayne's World. And when I saw Wayne's World, I just thought, why are you doing Bill and Ted? I know that the Saturday Night Live sketch predates Bill and, you know, there's an argument. But the first Bill and Ted I loved, and then the second Bill and Ted I was so relieved by, because it made me laugh all over again. And now after all these years, to have, when they announced that they were making a third Bill and Ted, I was beside myself.
And they've got daughters, and you know they're going to do some jokes about them being too alike to each other, and like it's going to be that again. And you know, I don't know how they can mess it up, because like they just need to do it again.
Well, I'm sure they can find a way of messing it up, but I'm just hoping that they haven't found it, because I have such affection for those characters.
And they're so, like, the films are so handmade. Like, I think that's part of the charm, and I hope that they don't lose so that aspect. They are.
Well, particularly Bill and Ted 2, when they're all walking around with sort of styrofoam, you know, costumes and everything. I mean, it makes Star Trek look kind of glamorous. But it is really funny.
Yeah, I think
so. It's really properly funny.
There is some language in, especially the second one, that's aged quite badly.
I really like.
Where they use a gay slur.
Oh, when's that?
Yeah, they use it quite often. But like it's just something that they God, well, did
that shows
in
that how
era.
Long ago I saw it. I didn't know you even noticed.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I rewatched them recently.
So they haven't aged well.
So they've aged fine.
Okay.
But like it's just occasionally there's like, oh yeah, that was a different time. Like, and it's like,
right.
And it's not just like the villains are saying it, like Bill and Ted also will say it.
Okay.
So there's things like that.
Well, you can fling that same accusation about Wayne's World.
Totally.
I mean, there are whole things
there's,
in Wayne's
there's
World.
There's so
now
many
go,
comedies and things like that that we can look back on and go, oh, that's not great, is it? But like it was in my opinion, you have to separate sometimes time from things and be like, well, that was acceptable then. It doesn't mean it was right, but like you can't like blame the film and condemn it because of that.
It does have the phrase full on robot chubby, which is still a favourite for me.
That's what I mean. The language is a bit weird.
Okay, so that sees us through to September. Now, two things in September, which I'm really excited about. There is this Many Saints of Newark thing, which is a Sopranos prequel, right?
Oh, right, okay.
Okay, which I know nothing about this either. Other than that, but before that, Last Night in Soho, the Edgar Wright film, which he has just been over here editing. So this is December that we're talking, last year, when you're watching this now. This is like a Christopher Nolan movie, isn't it? And I was on stage with Edgar, and he's editing simultaneously Last Night in Soho and the Sparks documentary. He's editing the two of them at the same time. Last Night in Soho, I am really, really excited
about. I'm super excited about it. It's a horror film, isn't it?
As far as I understand,
yeah.
And I think it owes some inspirational debt to American Werewolf in London. Mm-hmm. And he has shot in Soho.
Yeah.
Because funnily enough, one of the things he was saying was when you look back at American Werewolf now, you're astonished that they managed to shoot that stuff, in particular the finale, where they managed to shoot it. And I'm a really big fan of Edgar's stuff. I think he's a really, really interesting. I love Baby Driver.
He's the filmmaker that shaped my entire generation. Like every person who wants to be a filmmaker or make something ended up ripping off Edgar Wright at first. Okay. Like the way that he like pieces scenes together, his very, very trademark editing. The quick cuts to things. Like everybody tried to do that first. That's what everybody was trying to go for. He's also cast, I can't remember what her name is, but she's fantastic.
Anya Taylor-Joy.
Yes.
Who is fantastic? Who's in The Vavitch?
Yes. And she's so good, and I'm so excited to see her in something like this with the energy that Edgar Wright has got. Yeah, I wasn't a massive fan of Baby Driver.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. What did you not like?
I found some of it a bit too functional. Like, I think that the story was interesting, and it's somebody dealing with themselves and not being able to, like, you know, understand like how they can feel one way and do another thing. And the way that he demonstrated that was, you know, it's classic stuff. I get it. I get what he's referencing, but it was like him looking at himself in a reflection. And that was, I was like, oh, that's a bit, I was like, it's a bit functional. But like, I do tend to go back to Baby Driver, weirdly. I think there's something about the aesthetics and the rhythm of it that I find fun, but I find it frustrating, I think.
Okay.
I just think it's a musical.
I mean, I just think that, you know,
I'm a sourpuss about it.
Yeah, I mean, you are. I think it works really well, and I've seen it a few times now, and I just find it thrilling. I just love the choreography of it, and I love the.
And he has made all of the car chasers sort of like look
balletic, and he's other car chasers. I think the car stuff is up there with the great car, and I love the French Connection, and I love Bullet, and you know, but I think Baby Driver is.
Very, very happy that it won a BAFTA for sound, I think.
And maybe
editing as well.
The editing is astonishing, isn't it? Absolutely astonishing.
Yeah, I'm just excited to see how he can use that technique in a horror.
And of course, we have Ansel Elgort coming in West Side Story at the end of the year, which is
also starring Rachel Zegler, who is this up-and-coming actress who is an unknown.
Okay.
And she had a video go viral, and people think it's something to do with that as to why she got cast, but it's nothing to do with that. But Steven Spielberg just found this 17-year-old girl who's incredibly talented, and she's like a big fan of like My Friend Dodie and things like that. So it's this very strange thing where like people who are fans of like things that I've been making online and things like that, and people that I know are now in Steven Spielberg films. It's like this very weird marrying of
worlds. Yeah, but you were having dinner with Ron Howard, so you know, what do I know about anything?
But yeah, West Side Story. I'm excited to see what Spielberg does with that, because it's like the most low key thing he's done for years.
I'm excited and worried because I love West Side Story, and I, you know, with all the things that are wrong with it, I still love it. It's like one of those things about going back and visiting a classic. On the subject of which, when we get to October, we get Death on the Nile, which is the, you know, Branagh doing the Poirot.
Oh yeah, another Poirot.
Exactly. Now, I mean, I
liked
Murder
on the Orient Express.
So did I. I'm so glad. People were so snotty about that film.
I really, really liked it. I thought it was so much fun.
And it looked great.
I thought he was great in it as well. Yeah. And I was like, he directed this and did that performance. I thought it was fantastic.
And the level of performance in his Poirot was great, because I think you see this in Knives Out. Did you like Knives Out?
I loved Knives Out.
Right, fine. So that whole thing when Daniel Craig is doing Blanc, you know, and it's this ripe, over-the-top comic performance. That is absolutely inspired to some extent by Peter Ustinov doing Poirot in the film version of Death on the Nile. But I think Branagh's the right person for the job. I loved the way Murder on the Orient Express looked. Mm-hmm. I thought they found a really... Because the thing with Murder on the Orient Express is everyone knows the solution.
Yes.
And I thought it was very, that they still made it interesting. And I really love the way it looks. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Do we know anything about it? Do we know who's in it or anything?
We probably do, but I don't. I know is that it's a Branagh thing with him. I know this sounds really stupid. I said the thing at the beginning about trying to see the thing that I don't know about. I do specifically avoid finding out about things.
Yeah,
because particularly nowadays, it's so easy to turn your phone on and go, oh,
yeah,
you know, Now I know something that I wish I didn't know, you know. So and Cameo's given away. Anyway, so no, I don't. I just know that it's Branagh. Halloween Kills, same month.
Yeah, excited about that.
Yes,
I'm excited.
Apparently, it's a trilogy.
It's a trilogy, yeah, and that's going to end. And I think that John Carpenter's still involved. Still,
all I know is that I thought that the one that we've just had was really great, and I thought Jamie Lee Curtis was really, really good in it. I don't know that I want another two, but you know, but let's see.
That's how I feel as well, is that like that one felt like we're putting this to bed.
Yeah.
And then it felt like, oh, it was a massive success. Let's do a trilogy.
Yeah.
And I like David Gordon Green. And I think Jamie Lee Curtis has finally found, I think she feels satisfied by this,
yeah.
40 years later.
And she's having an absolutely, I mean, with that and Knives, I mean, she is like, she's career best performances.
I completely agree, yeah.
And she's, you know, the production role in the Halloween things, it's like she now has ownership of it, mm-hmm. which is great.
The saga of Michael Myers and Laurie Strode isn't over. On October 16th, 2020, Halloween Kills.
Get out of here!
And on October 15th, 2021.
Happy Halloween, Michael.
Halloween ends.
Then we get to November, and the two things that stand out for me, The Eternals, which I know almost nothing about, and then Dune. And I interviewed Rebecca Ferguson, and I said, what can you tell me about Dune? And she said, well, all I can tell you is it's going to be amazing, and it's Denis Villeneuve.
Yeah.
And
who's shooting it? It's Hoyter, isn't it?
Yes, it's Hoyter van Hoyt.
Because Nolan had to get a different editor. So he had to get a different DOP and a different composer.
Because
Zimmer wanted to do Dune.
That's interesting.
So it's Ludwig
Göransson,
who's doing Tenet.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm really excited about
Dune.
And
I think Lee Smith might be doing it as well. So I think he's got a different...
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, I'm really, really excited about it, not least because I think that the Lynch Dune never worked. But
I never saw it.
Oh, okay. You never saw any of it.
I know nothing about Dune. I just know that it's one of these big...
And you never read the book.
Never read the book, so I've just heard that it's, again, similar to Watchmen, which I mentioned earlier, it's one of these ones that's hailed to be unadaptable.
Yes.
And so...
I mean, famously, that's what we end up... The reason that we had Alien was because Jodorowsky was doing Dune, and they got in Giga... to do the designs for Dune,
mm-hmm.
and then the whole thing fell down. And then when Alien came into being, Jodorowsky kind of came with the remnants, because Alien comes out of the remnants of that Dune production. And, you know, because the Lynch Dune was... I mean, but he did Dune in order to do Blue Velvet. That was kind of the payoff. And it never worked, but it had moments in it that were good. It was, you know, it was just too much. But I think that Denis Villeneuve actually probably could wrestle it into some kind of shape.
I think so too. I think that Denis Villeneuve is... I think that Blade Runner 2049...
was great.
I don't like to throw this word around, but I think it might be a masterpiece.
Yeah.
I think it is so... It gets better every time I watch it.
Yeah.
I think Arrival is outstanding.
I love Arrival.
It is outstanding. I remember the first... I mean, spoilers, everybody. If you haven't seen Arrival, please watch Arrival. But like, there's a moment... in Arrival when I was watching it the first time in the cinema, and I literally giddily turned to my friend and shook him and went, it's about time, it's about time. And I was like, it just, the way that it uses the audience's perception of how narrative works against you as a twist in the film.
Have you read the short story?
I haven't.
The brilliant thing about it is, because
the short story just tells you, doesn't it?
Well, yes, it does. But in the same way, as you forget the film tells you. At the very beginning of the film, she says the thing about, you know, I thought this was the... And the short story absolutely draws on all that stuff from Kurt Vonnegut and Kilgore Trout and the Trouthmadorians perceiving time in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was a kid, I just read Kurt Vonnegut. I loved Kurt Vonnegut. And that was one of the things that Vonnegut was absolutely obsessed with, was the idea of time. And this comes back to the Chris Nolan stuff.
Yeah.
It's all that kind of... thing about the way in which you perceive time is, and there's a brilliant bit in Slaughterhouse-Five in which Billy Pilgrim discovers that the Trouthmadorians see time as a whole rather than as a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, that's brilliant because now it means you don't have wars or anything. You go, no, we have wars. We just perceive them in a different way. And Arrival was one of those movies when, as you say, you go,
yeah.
You know, and actually the weird thing is when you know what's going on, it's better,
yeah.
Because the second time round, it's
a completely different experience.
So good, yeah. It's so great.
And I love like Nolan and Denis Villeneuve and people who use time in cinema and they make it a part of the narrative. But I also love lately Greta Gerwig's approach to cinema. I think also has a similar relationship with time, but she doesn't point it out.
Okay.
I think that Lady Bird and Little Women, especially Little Women, actually use time.
Is Greta Gerwig making the Barbie film?
I think I did hear about this.
With Noah Baumbach writing the script and Margot Robbie starring.
Right, this sounds made.
I'm about to go from here to Noah Baumbach. And I'm gonna.
I'm gonna
by the time
you
watch this, will all be. But it's. I look. Don't look. Apparently.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Sure.
Okay, so look, but that's taking us to the end of the year. What am I missing? What are the things that you're... I mean, I thought it was pretty thorough.
That was pretty thorough. That was pretty thorough.
I did my homework.
The thing I wanted to talk about was a look ahead to the awards.
Okay.
And I wanted to know what your thoughts were.
You mean the Oscars?
In the Oscars and the BAFTAs, who are we thinking is going to be leading the way at this time, at where we're sitting right now?
Okay, so I think that Hilda Gudnadottir will win Best Score.
I hope she does.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no question about her nomination.
I think Randy Newman should be nominated for Marriage Story as well. I thought his score was really unique.
And Thomas Newman will get nominated for 1917.
Sure.
But I think that Hilda Gudnadottir will win.
I hope she does.
I don't know what else will happen with Joker because I was talking just last night to a very good friend of mine within the industry who said you have to remember that an awful lot of the Academy voters are 70-year-old farts who hate Joker.
Yeah.
And so when
we talked about Joker,
I actually thought it wasn't even going to get nominated for Best Film because of the backlash against
it. Yeah, I was like, hand him the award now. Who's going to compete with him? And now, where I'm sitting now, I'm like, I think he'll get nominated, but I would give it wholeheartedly to Adam Driver in Marriage Story, who I thought
do you think he will win?
I think at the moment it seems like he's on the right track to win.
Okay.
I think emotionally, just personally, I would want him to win because I thought it was so beautiful what he did, so quiet and complex and nuanced.
Yeah, except when he sings the song.
I love that
bit. I know, so do I, but that's the one bit that's not quiet because he's that's the bit when he's, you know.
Yeah. Being alive.
Yeah. And I'm so not good. Even a Sondheim fan, but I thought, wow.
Yeah, I think that's the clip they'll show. And I think that's weird, but I reckon that's the bit that stands out. But I think he should, and I hopefully think he will win. I also think that Parasite is undoubtedly going to win for Best Foreign Language Film. And hopefully just gets nominated.
I haven't even seen the front. It is up for Foreign Language Film.
Oh, it's not. There's no... It's not been revealed or anything yet. There's nothing, but nothing's been nominated.
No, but it has been. It has been submitted. It is the official submission.
I assume it must be.
Yes,
hopefully it gets nominated for Best Picture as well.
Because there's this weird thing about the way the Oscars work is that foreign language film have to be submitted by the country.
In the BAFTAs, film
not in the English language is any film not in the English language. At the Oscars, it's like the French film has to be submitted by France.
Right.
And you go. Why? Because foreign countries are only allowed to have one good film a year.
Yeah.
It's like this really nuts selection process.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, I know. And I've never fully understood. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that the Oscars have always had a botch with that. But I mean, I absolutely love Parasite. The Adam Driver thing is interesting. There is the Netflix thing counting against it, but I think that maybe the Oscars have kind of got over that despite Steven Spielberg and
it
all
that. It feels like they might have because I think The Irishman's going to be a big hitter as well. I think The Irishman's going to get nominated for a lot of things.
Oh, do you think? Okay.
I'm just getting the feeling that it might get nominated
for a lot of stuff. Roma won Best Picture, so that's kind of...
No, it didn't.
What did?
Green Book won Best Picture.
Oh, yes, of course. No, you're absolutely right. Roma won Best
BAFTA.
Foreign Language Film.
Yeah, and it won BAFTAs, and he won Director.
Okay, can I just say that... is the driving Miss Daisy case in point. It's less than a year ago, and I've already completely forgotten about Green Book.
Yeah.
Oh, my word.
I know, yeah.
Oh, my word. It didn't. It won Best Foreign Language Film.
Yeah.
Because Green Book
beat
Black Klansman.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the driving... If you've Spike Lee, right?
Yeah.
That's twice.
Yeah. They gave him a screenplay.
Yeah, but that's twice. You lost out to Driving Miss Daisy and then you lost out to Green Book, the film that no one can remember, the film that less than a year later I'd forgotten existed.
Yep.
Good heavens.
Yeah, so I'm hoping, because it's been such a great year for film, I'm hoping that sort of thing doesn't happen again this year, but who knows what will happen. But I've just got a good feeling about, like, Marriage Story, Parasite, The Irishman... I hope, as well, a thing that I have my fingers crossed for is that I hope that Shia LaBeouf wins for screenplay for Honey Boy.
Oh, okay.
Because that film was written as a therapy exercise.
I know, in rehab.
In rehab, and now has become this story. And I think that is a great Oscar story as well. I think they'll love that, like turning your pain into art, and here it is, and here's an award for it. Like, well done. I think that's a great Oscar story, but I also commend it.
Have you seen Uncut Gems yet?
No.
You see, because I haven't seen it yet, but everyone tells me, everyone keeps saying Uncut Gems, you know how much you love Punch Drunk Love, and you know, I mean, I love the Safdies anyway. They keep saying Adam Sandler up for an Oscar. And I mean, that's, you know, there's part of
it. It's going to be a packed category. Like, at the moment, it's like Joaquin Phoenix, there's Adam Sandler, there's Robert De Niro, there's Adam Driver. You know, there's so many brilliant performances at the moment that I'm like, I don't know where it's going
to
go.
The only thing I think is safe money. I've got to go in a minute because I've got to go and see Noah Baumbach.
Okay.
Literally, he's waiting at a hotel going, where is he? It's like, you know, it comes a Friday, he doesn't ring, he doesn't write. I think the only dead cert, and I will say this, this is a dead cert, is Hilda Gudnadotter. I think that is an absolute, not least because it's a way of, I mean, firstly, her score is brilliant.
It is.
But secondly, it's a way of giving an Oscar to Joker without giving an Oscar to Joker.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
we love the score.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's going to get nominated for picture. I'll be surprised if it does.
Won't it get nominated because they have the expanding category that can go up to 9 and they want a blockbuster in there, and that is a blockbuster because it's the biggest selling R-rated movie.
The other one is maybe Endgame gets in there as well, as like, because another one that I was rooting for.
Endgame for Best Picture rather than Joker.
I wouldn't do that. But like another one I was rooting for, but I don't think will happen now, was Robert Downey Jr. for actor as well.
Yeah, yeah.
For doing 10 years of a character arc that's not been done before. So yeah, like, I think it's a very exciting year, and I hope it doesn't disappoint, because it's been such a strong year. It'd be so disappointing if Green Book happens.
Okay. Yeah, what is this year's Green Book? I'm just trying to think. What's the bland, middle-of-the-road...
I don't know if it happened yet. Maybe, I mean, actually, if Joker won, I'd be like, oh, come on. Like,
really?
I genuinely would, yeah.
Okay. It won't, though.
It won't.
It won't. If it gets nominated, I think that'll be as far as it goes. I have to go, because I have to go and talk to Noah Baumbach.
Well, thank you for talking to me about next year.
And I'll see you next year.
Yeah, sure.
Timey-wimey. Tenet.
Nolan.
Well, there we go. That's me and Jack Howard looking ahead to the year in film 2020. If you enjoyed the podcast and you'd like to hear a version of it without adverts and with some added video extras, then why not visit our Patreon page? Remember to subscribe, tell your friends, keep watching the skies.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.